2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 7 through 10. Let me read you those verses. And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake, for when I am weak, then I am strong. We all suffer in this life, and some suffer more than others. This is true even of those who serve the Lord. But is suffering necessarily a sign of God's displeasure? Or is there actually a divine purpose behind it? Here in our text, the Apostle Paul shares something with us about his own sufferings and the things that the Lord revealed to him in response to his cries for deliverance. And I believe that here in these verses, there are words of great encouragement for us too. So let's look at these verses together. But first, we need to just get the setting. We need to get the background. The Corinthian church was a problematic church. They were very, very influenced by the world, very impressed with things human. They were very impressed with human intellect and the ability to articulate. And they were very impressed with human strength and wisdom and those kinds of things. And Paul addresses all of those issues in the various epistles, the two epistles that he wrote to them. They had succumbed to some of the false teachers who had come in suggesting that Paul wasn't really an apostle, that he didn't really have the insight and the authority that he claimed, and they would put the Apostle Paul down in order to elevate themselves, and unfortunately, the Corinthians bought into it. This forced the Apostle Paul to do something that he did not want to do, but reluctantly, he had to end up what he called boasting about himself and about his ministry. But in the end, what you find he actually did was he simply boasted in the Lord. But he asked questions. Are they apostles? He said, so am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. And he went down a list. And then he went on and he showed them how his ministry was far more impactful and far more successful than theirs were, although it was riddled with affliction and with suffering. And then he tells them about an experience that evidently he hadn't really shared with many people. He tells them about an experience of actually having been caught up to heaven, to the very presence of the Lord. This probably took place when Paul was stoned in Lystra and dragged out of the city, and they considered him to be dead, and he might very well have been dead temporarily. And he tells them, I knew a man in Christ 14 years ago, whether in the body or out of the body, I don't know. But such a one was caught up into the third heaven. And he said, and there he saw things that are inexpressible, things that it would not be lawful for a man to try to communicate in human language. And so this is the background to the statement here in verse 7. And so it's this abundance of revelation that Paul had. Not only the revelation that he had as an apostle into the truth of the gospel and all of the implications of the gospel, but that truth that was revealed to him while he was there in the presence of the Lord in heaven. And so he says, and lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelation. So that's what he's talking about. That's the background. So he goes on to say this. He says, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. What was this thorn in the flesh for Paul? And what might this be today for some of us who might have a similar kind of thing? Well, Paul doesn't tell us exactly what it was. He does tell us the source of it. He says it was a messenger of Satan to buffet him. He doesn't tell us exactly what it was, but I believe that it was more than likely some sort of a chronic physical infirmity that the apostle had. In many places, he alludes to the fact that he was physically weak and infirmed. He alludes to the fact that he had some sort of a chronic physical condition. Now, some people have mistakenly interpreted the thorn in the flesh to be some sort of a besetting sin. A besetting sin is a sin that a person continues to stumble into. That is not what the apostle was talking about. He's not talking about having a habit of sin in his life he can't break. He's talking about something that's coming against him from the outside, something that's actually being done to him by Satan. In verse 10, he speaks of infirmities, reproaches, needs, persecutions, distresses, harassments. These are the kinds of things that he is talking about. He's speaking about anything that would weaken a person and put them at a disadvantage in their efforts to serve the Lord. He's speaking about having sort of a handicap. Now you know Paul was a man of great passion. He was a man of great vision. He was a man of great faith. And he was a man who wanted to get the gospel out as far and wide as he possibly could. But he also finds that he has this frustrating thing that's going on in his life. He has this thing that seems to be hindering him. It seems to be limiting him. It seems to be keeping him back from his full potential in ministry. It's this thorn in the flesh. It's this weakness. It's this sickness, probably, that would slow him down and drag him down and interfere with the things that he wanted to do for the Lord. You know, when you read the biographies of great men and women of faith, this is what you find is the case with many of them. I recommend reading unabridged biographies because the shorter biographies usually just highlight all of the great points and never let you know about the downside of their lives in ministry, the struggles, the conflicts, the battles, and so forth. But what you find in the lives of the great men and women who have served the Lord over the years, you find a similar kind of a thing. You find that many of them, although they had great spiritual power, they were afflicted physically. You think of a person like Martin Luther or Charles Spurgeon or William Carey, the great missionary to India, or John Wesley. And as you look at the lives of these men who have had such an impact historically on the world and the church, you find that they were oftentimes afflicted. They oftentimes lived with chronic bodily pain or mental affliction and things of that nature. What is the explanation for that? I think it's the same thing that Paul is talking about here. A messenger of Satan to buffet me. Now, what Paul didn't know, but came to know through the Lord speaking to him, is that this thing was necessary. And not only was it necessary, what Paul couldn't see, and what we so often can't see, is that this thing was actually a blessing in disguise. It was actually beneficial, even though it seemed detrimental. Now, Paul came to understand that, but I don't think he knew that initially. I think this is one of those things that he probably just could not understand at all why he was in this condition. And he tells us here that it was something that he prayed fervently about. He says that on three separate occasions, he pleaded with the Lord. Three separate occasions. And I believe that what Paul's describing here are three seasons of desperate prayer. He says, I pleaded with the Lord. I begged the Lord. I cried out to the Lord. Lord, you have got to deliver me from this. Lord, you've got to get this thing out of my life because it's keeping me back from all that I want to do for you. It's hindering me. It's slowing me down. Do you ever feel that way about something? Maybe there's a physical infirmity that's just there chronically dragging you down. Maybe there's a person in your life that you are connected to and can't get detached from, and that person is seemingly a constant hindrance to your service to the Lord. Maybe it's a situation that's just beyond your control. You can't sort out this thing, and it just is there, and it's always there, and it seems to be holding you back. Maybe it's a mental sort of an affliction, a depression or something like that that just, you know, it just seems to be there, and you look at it and you think, this is a curse. This is horrible. And you might say, Lord, what are you doing? Lord, do you know how much better I could serve you if I didn't have this problem, this situation, this person? But you see, the Lord knows things that we do not know. And what the Lord reveals to Paul about this thorn in the flesh that he no doubt, like we would, thought was a big downer, what the Lord reveals to Paul is that this was actually for his benefit. This was a preventative measure on the part of God. You see, we don't know ourselves. We think we do, but we really don't know ourselves or the potential pitfalls that await us, but God knows. Oh, there have been things that I have been so frustrated over, and I've cried out to the Lord. And recently I had a situation like this where I was just crying out to the Lord about this particular thing. And I saw this particular situation as a curse and as something that wasn't right and something that was really hindering what God potentially could do. And just in a flash, the Lord showed me, you know what? I've done this for your protection. And suddenly I just thought, wow, I never thought of it like that. But as I thought through it, I realized, oh, Lord, thank you. You did do this for my protection. You see, we don't know ourselves. And that thing that we think is dragging us down, you know what? It's actually preventing us from being lifted up with pride, perhaps. Perhaps it's preventing us from being carried away into sin. You know, we would think, oh, I would never do that. I would never go in that direction. But we don't really know. Who would have ever thought that Paul would have a propensity for pride? He was a humble man, but yet God said, I've done this for your benefit. God could see that there was the potential for Paul to become lifted up over the abundance of the revelation. And so if we find ourselves in a situation like this, what is the answer? Well, of course, we pray about it. And we ask the Lord. And perhaps the Lord will deliver us at some point, maybe not immediately, but perhaps he will deliver us at some time. I think unless God has spoken to us specifically about something like this, we ought to continue to pray about it. I think we ought to pray about it all the time unless the Lord tells us otherwise. But you know, sometimes he will tell us otherwise. And that's what happened with the Apostle Paul. I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me. Lord, take this thing away from me. This is slowing me down. This is holding me back. This is hindering me. This is interfering with the work that I want to do for you. And what was the response of Jesus to Paul? He said, my grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness. In other words, what Jesus said is, Paul, I'm not going to take this away from you. Instead of taking it away from you, I am going to give you the grace to live with it. I'm going to give you a sufficient amount of grace to deal with this situation. And Paul, what you're going to come to understand is that my strength is perfected in your weakness. Now, this is something, like many things in the Bible, that is not only paradoxical, two totally opposite kinds of ideas, but it's something that in our culture we despise. We despise weakness. We don't want to think about being weak, or, you know, nobody in their right mind would ever get up and boast about how weak they are. It's just not the way we do things. Paul was very candid. He was very open and honest about his weaknesses. He said to the Corinthians in the first epistle, he said, I came to you in fear and in trembling and in weakness. You know, if Paul was candidating to be the pastor of a mega church today, the moment he said something like that, they'd say, okay, that's not our man. We don't want any of that. Fear, trembling, weakness. We want strength. We want a leader. We want somebody that knows where they're going and what they're doing. You know, that's fine in the world, but it's not the way God does it in the kingdom. You see, because our strengths, believe it or not, they end up being our handicap when it comes to the things of the Spirit. God doesn't need my strength. How could the all-powerful God possibly need my strength? He doesn't need my strength. You know what he needs me to do? He needs me to get out of the way so he can exercise his strength. And you know what he does sometimes in order to accomplish that? He makes us weak. He makes us weak. He sends a messenger of Satan to buffet us. He brings something into our lives that seems to be a hindrance, that seems to be so opposite of what we think we need. But you see, he does it because his strength is made perfect in weakness. And as Paul went on to say, when I am weak, then I am strong. And notice the resolution in verse 10. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Paul came to the point, and here's where you see Paul's maturity. He came to the point where he was able to finally embrace this thing. He was no longer resisting it. When the Lord made it clear to him, Paul, I'm not going to take this from you. Instead, I'm going to give you grace to endure. And I'm going to use this weakness to to demonstrate my strength, Paul said, okay, Lord, then I will rejoice in infirmities. I will rejoice in needs and persecution and affliction and these things because, Lord, I see what you're doing. You're weakening me only so you can demonstrate your strength in and through my life. Now, this is challenging stuff. This is difficult. Even with the all-sufficient grace, it doesn't mean that it's not going to be challenging. I told Cheryl last night I'm a bit reluctant to apply this so much to myself, but I feel compelled to do so. Because this ninth verse has become my life verse, not by choosing. Had I chosen a verse for my life verse, this would not be the verse I would choose. But due to circumstances beyond my control, this is, I would have to say, the verse that has marked my life for the past 25 years. In 1983, I had just turned 26 years old. I was on staff here as an intern pastor. I was a youth pastor. I was teaching the Monday evening Bible study here. And throughout the month of November and December of 82, I wasn't feeling well. But it wasn't like anything I'd ever experienced before. Up until that point, I had been a perfectly healthy person. Never really knew a day of sickness in my life apart from, you know, the typical stuff, a cold every now and again, and so forth. But in November and December of 82, I began to feel weak, fatigued. I'll never forget going on a hospital call one time. And as I was standing there beside the bed, talking with the person and praying with them, in my mind I was thinking, I wonder if there's any room in that bed. Could you scoot over? I'm serious. That's how I felt. Now, you know, I'm 25 years old, and I turned 26 on the last day of the year. On January 4th, 1983, I came home that evening, and I said to Cheryl, I said, you know what? Something's the matter with me. I do not feel right. And having said that, I collapsed on the floor, and I spent the next 3 months in bed. Went to the doctor several times, had a series of tests run. Basically, nobody could tell me. They could sense there was some sort of viral thing, but they had no idea what it was. And it was a time of weakness like I'd never, ever even imagined you could experience. I'd never had anything like it before. Around April, I began to get a little bit of strength back. And I'll never forget coming back to teach the Monday night Bible study here and having to be helped in, having to sit on a stool to teach, and having to be helped back out to my car to get home. Now, you know, when you're 26 years old, you just don't want to feel that way. And there I was in this state of utter and complete weakness and confusion. And oh, I remember how the warfare was so intense back in those days, and the enemy was coming in and challenging everything I'd ever believed about anything. It was a time of great affliction. But you know, here's the really bizarre twist to it. It was in May of that year, just about a month after I started to slowly get back involved in life and in ministry, that I received a phone call from Pastor Chuck Eason down in Vista, who was pastoring a little Calvary Chapel down there, and he said, I'm going to go on vacation, and I'd like you to come and fill in for me. And I thought, you know, I can barely get out of bed. I can't go fill in for anybody. But strangely enough, I felt compelled by the Lord to take him up on that request. So I did. And for 3 weeks in May, we went and we filled in the pulpit there at that little church in Vista. And it was exhausting. It was challenging. But again, we felt the Lord was calling us to do it. After I finished the 3 weeks of filling in, came back home that Sunday evening. Monday morning, I received a call from Chuck Eason. And he said, I have resigned from the church, and I believe the Lord wants you to become the pastor. And I said, I think you're crazy. I barely made it through 3 weeks. I'm back in bed, and I don't think that this is going to happen. And then I went to Pastor Chuck Smith, and I told him, and he affirmed, Chuck is crazy, you're not going anywhere. You see, we had our oldest daughter, his grandchild, and our oldest son had just been born. And he wasn't about to let those grandkids get out of his sight. But you know, Chuck was persistent, Chuck Eason. He said, well, I've retired, so the ball's in your court. And I, you know, felt like, I mean, more out of obligation than anything, I felt like, okay, I need to just go do this and see what happens. You know, maybe I can just fill in temporarily until the Lord brings somebody else along. And so as I went down on the weekends and began to do that and still, you know, struggling all the way with my health, the Lord began to speak to me, I want you to pastor this church. And I remember saying to the Lord, Lord, I can hardly get out of bed. How could I pastor this church? And my point is this, it was at a time of tremendous weakness that God called me to take this step. And in that, he showed me this same thing. My strength is made perfect in your weakness. Yes, you're weak, I understand that, but I will be with you. And he was. And we went. And oh, it was difficult. Oh, it was challenging. I remember when we were planning finally to move there from here, and we were looking at places to live, and we would go, you know, house shopping, and we would go into look at the model homes. I was so fatigued, I couldn't even get out of the car. Cheryl would go in, get a little layout of the place. She'd walk through it. She'd come back. We'd sit in the car, and she would tell me, well, the dining room's over here, and, you know, the master bedroom's here. And, you know, this was not the kind of condition you wanted to go into the ministry in. But it was the condition, evidently, I needed to be in. And so we went, and the Lord blessed. And after about 6 years of pastoring that church, well, 83... About 5 years later, in 1988, I was feeling pretty good. It took me that long to kind of get back to almost feeling normal. I was probably 75 or 80% back to what I used to be. And there we were in 88. We took a trip over to Europe. We had just, Costa Mesa had just purchased the castle. We went over and we were involved in a little conference over there. And Cheryl and I met a young couple from what was then Yugoslavia. And they just said, hey, why don't you come and see us? And why don't you come and see if the Lord might want to do something with Calvary Chapel in our country? And, you know, I felt pretty good at that point. And I thought, well, that might not be a bad idea. So I said, okay, let's do it. We'll plan to come over next year. And so we exchanged details, information, and that was the plan. But, you know, a few months later, I had pretty serious relapse. And I found myself right back where I was years earlier. I was right back in bed. I was weak again. And at this point, I was, you know, preoccupied with that situation. And I had more or less forgotten about the commitment that I'd made to this couple. You know, back then, we didn't really have internet. And in Yugoslavia at the time, they didn't even have telephones hardly. I think there was one phone in their village. And so, you know, no communication, out of sight, out of mind. And of course, I'm afflicted. So the last thing I'm thinking about is anything like that. And then out of the blue, I get a letter from them. And they say, oh, we've been praying for you. And we're so excited that you're coming. And we've made plans. And we've spoken, you know, to, oh, my. And I just thought, oh, no. Surely the Lord is not wanting me to go do this now. These guys, I need to get them a letter. I need to make contact with them. I need to let them know they've got to cancel all this stuff. I can't do it. But you know, again, deep down inside, I felt the Lord saying, don't do anything. Just wait on me. Trust me. And so through a process of time, more and more, since the Lord was saying, you need to go, you need to go. And honestly, my response was, no, Lord, please, I don't need to go. I don't want to go. Lord, how could I go in this condition? And just a few weeks before the trip, I had a situation where I had to be taken to emergency. And the doctors, of course, said, look, you know, you need to just relax. You need to go home. You need to stay in bed. And I agreed 100% with them. That's exactly what I thought myself. And my friends, you know, were telling me, look, you know, cancel that trip. You can't go do that. And I was saying, amen, I agree. But, you know, in my heart, the Lord was saying, you're going to go. You're going to trust me. I'm going to give you grace. I'm going to strengthen you. And we came right down to the very day, and I'll never forget. It was early in the morning. The flight, I think, was 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And I got up in the morning, and I probably felt the worst that day that I had felt the whole time. And I thought, okay, there is no way. I can't go. And I wasn't crying in the sense of, you know, I wasn't weeping or, you know, shedding tears, but I was crying in the sense of, Lord, please, you've got to get me out of this. I can't do this. And I was doing it out loud, like this, but I was in another room, and as I'm crying out, all of a sudden I hear this voice come. Now, it wasn't the Lord, because it was a female voice. And the voice said something like this, shut up, you big baby, trust the Lord, he's going to be with you, you're getting on that plane and going. That was an angel. Her name was Cheryl. And so you know what? She was right. I needed to trust the Lord. And we got on that plane and we went. And you know what? We did not know at the time. We had no idea that we were spearheading the work of Calvary Chapel into Europe. We had no idea. But from that trip, the Lord brought us into Europe. We planted the two first churches in Eastern Europe from that trip. And today, as we have maybe 150 or so churches in Europe, as we look back, that was the spearhead. That was the trip that began it. But you see, we didn't know that at the time. And then real quickly, one final thing. You know, again, a few years passed, and Cheryl had been very, very supportive of the ministry, and I'd gone over several times to these countries, but she had never gone with me. And we came to a point where I felt really strongly she needed to come. She needed to be involved more than just supporting from back home. She needed to see these people, meet these people, and see what the Lord was doing. So again, we made plans to go, and yet making the plans, again, I felt, you know, good at the time. But before we got to the time to go, I again found myself in one of these afflicted states. And it got so bad, I remember telling her at one point, I just said, honey, I know I asked you to go. I know that we had big plans for this trip, but listen, I cannot go. I cannot do this. I know I've done it before, but I can't do it again. It's just too much. And she said, fine, I'll go by myself. And I said, you can't go by yourself. Stop it. Be realistic. I'm telling you, we can't go. She said, I'm going. The Lord told me I'm going. Oh, a stubborn wife. But you know, again, I'll never forget, I was lying in bed, and the Lord just spoke to me, and he spoke a word to me that literally raised me up out of my bed. He just spoke to me and said, get up, you're going. And his word empowered me to get up. And from that point on, okay, we're going. Now, again, here's what I didn't realize. 1 year later, we moved as a family to Europe. I had no idea that that was even ahead of us at that point. But I look back now and I realize that that trip itself was preparation for what we would do a year later. It planted the seed for Cheryl to be willing to, when I came to her and said, I think God's calling us to England, for her to say, I believe that. But in all of this, I'm telling you all of these stories for one reason. In every single situation, there was tremendous weakness and the absolute necessity of depending on the Lord and not on myself. And I can't remember a single significant thing I've done for the kingdom of God that hasn't been accompanied by weakness. That's why this has become my life verse. I never would have chosen it, as I said, but it has become my life verse. And I can tell you today that just what Jesus said to Paul is true for anyone else who is in that situation, that thorn in the flesh that's there. God knows it's there. He not only allowed it to be there, in a sense, he put it there. He put it there for our benefit. He put it there so we could experience his grace and so he could accomplish things through us that he wants to do that we could never do ourselves. And in the end, when he does it, we will never take the glory for it because we're weak. And we know our weakness. We know our frailty. We know that any good thing, any significant thing, any lasting fruit comes from the grace of God. Are you suffering today? Do you find yourself with perhaps a thorn in the flesh? Remember this. His grace is sufficient for you, for his strength is made perfect in weakness. Don't despise the weakness, but rather embrace it so that the grace of God might empower you to do things that you never could do on your own and in your own strength.